Hey, I'm Dr. Michael Hunter, forensic pathologist from Autopsy, Reels Channel's medical mystery series on Podcast One and Apple Podcasts. Be sure to download the Podcast One app and subscribe. Then go to Reels.com, that's R-E-E-L-Z.com, to find more programs like this one on Reels Channel.
Good morning, everyone. Christopher Reeve died in New York. The actor turned activist is being remembered this morning as a courageous and inspirational person who provided hope to millions of people.
Actor Christopher Reeve captured the heart of the world with his invincible Superman.
Most Americans still think of him as the Man of Steel.
But in 1995, a horseback riding accident left Christopher paralyzed from the neck down. He vowed to fight back.
I will not be spending the rest of my life in a wheelchair.
That is a man driven to overcome the situation he's in.
Becoming a beacon of hope for Americans with spinal cord injuries.
He was the person that carried the weight of that message.
On October 10th, 2004, Christopher Reeve died, with most sections of the press reporting the reason as heart failure. Having spent nearly 10 years of his life living as a quadriplegic, Chris had been afforded the best medical care available and was expected to live into his 60s. Yet, he died at the age of just 52. But the details of what killed him are still shrouded in mystery. I need to find out what was going on inside of his body that led to his sudden death.
World-renowned medical examiner and forensic pathologist Dr. Michael Hunter has conducted thousands of autopsies, collaborating closely with law enforcement and other forensic specialists. His pivotal role in investigating suspicious cases has revealed the truth behind mysterious deaths for over 20 years.
The world's media reported Christopher Reeve's death as heart failure. But this raised more questions than it answered. Heart failure is the end result of a variety of serious underlying health conditions. Given the uncertainty surrounding Chris's unexpected death, I need to examine all available evidence to discover what killed America's Superman.
July 2004. New Orleans, Louisiana. 3 months before Christopher Reeve's death. Chris is directing a feature film, The Brooke Ellison Story, a movie about the experiences of a young quadriplegic graduate. It's a pet project between Chris and longtime friend and producer, Howard Meltzer.
The energy Chris brought to the set was amazing. Being a quadriplegic himself, I thought who better could know what Brooke Ellison went through than someone like him.
Chris has ensured that filming is a family affair. Dana, his actress wife, appears in the movie, as does 12-year-old son, Will.
We put him in the film, and he was a good little actor.
But behind the scenes, Chris's medical team is constantly on set. They need to treat and monitor an infection Chris is fighting, brought on by a bed sore.
It was one of his nurses that told me that it was pretty bad. But he never brought it up. He didn't want anyone to know.
I can see in accounts from the summer of 2004, Chris was suffering with bed sores, also known as decubitus or pressure ulcers. It's a common problem with immobile people. Being stationary in a wheelchair or bed puts excessive pressure on the skin. As blood flow is restricted, body tissue is damaged, creating an open wound which escalates the risk of infection. Chris may have felt slight pain from his bed sores, but they could have progressed and become life-threatening. Chris's medical team had been treating any infections with antibiotics while he was receiving what appeared to be expert care around the clock. The cause of his death is not immediately apparent.
Christopher Reeve was born on September 25th, 1952, in New York, to Barbara Johnson and Franklin Reeve.
Donna Kaufman, author and journalist.
Chris came from an academic family that was educated and worldly. His mother was a journalist. His father was a writer and educator.
In 1956, Chris's parents divorced, and as a means of coping, he turned to the stage.
Paul Donnelly, biographer.
When he was 9 years old, he appeared in a production of Gilbert Sullivan's The Omen of the Guard. It was then that he really thought, yes, this is where I belong. I'm an actor.
I went at it early. When I was 9 years old, I started, became professional when I was 14, and I stuck to it.
As a 21-year-old, Chris applied and was accepted at the prestigious Juilliard School in New York to study drama. And he became friends with another struggling actor, Robin Williams.
I witnessed firsthand the special friendship that Robin and Chris had. Robin brought out the fun in Chris.
Chris was not like a warm and fuzzy guy. He didn't want to be a warm and fuzzy guy, but he loved Robin. And Robin loved him.
In 1974, Chris got his first taste of screen success on the soap opera Love of Life.
People would watch that show every day just to check out this gorgeous young guy in his 20s who was a womanizer on the show. He got more fan mail than anyone else in that cast.
In 1977, Chris got his big break. Three movie producers teamed up to buy the rights to comic book hero Superman. And the search was on for a new Man of Steel.
He's one of these people who threw himself into the role. He certainly threw himself into the role of Superman, doing a lot of physical work, bulking up.
Chris put on 33 pounds to become the Man of Steel.
Easy, miss. I've got you.
You've got me? Who's got you?
So whether he was getting rid of bad guys or nuclear missiles, he was there to do the right thing and make America proud.
Released in 1978, Superman earned over $300 million and transformed Chris from a soap star to an international celebrity. However, he soon faced another challenge, escaping the cape.
Ian A. Hunt, director, Christopher Reeve, Hope in Motion.
Chris wanted to be taken seriously, and for the amount of time I knew him, he was always trying to play down the Superman part.
Right after Superman, I kind of went through a phase that I wanted to be as strange as possible. I really only liked your character if you could be gay, crippled, psychotic, or preferably all three at the same time.
This is my time with him, damn it. This is my time. This is our deal. 10 o'clock, not 3 o'clock, right?
Chris moved away from the Superman franchise and into more critically acclaimed films like The Bostonians and The Remains of the Day. By 1995, Chris was a doting dad to Matthew and Alexandra through his previous relationship with English model Gay Exton. And he was now happily married to wife Dana, with whom he had a son, Will. But Chris's life would soon be turned upside down. May 27th, 1995, Culpeper, Virginia. The Commonwealth Dressage and Combined Training Association finals.
Christopher Reeve was due to film in Dublin. He was going to go there with his wife, Dana. Just before, he thought, I'll go to Culpeper and take part in a horse event.
He was an accomplished horseman, learning it 10 years before for a movie role.
Chris was concerned about later parts of the course, and therefore paid less attention to the routine 3-foot third fence.
All I know is that he started the course. This is the third fence. And his horse stopped, and he went down the horse's neck.
He went head first into the fence. People ran onto the field trying to help. It was a disastrous situation.
It's nothing that anybody ever wants to see anyone experience.
The only reason he survived is because where he came off was right in front of the medical station, and the medics were at his side within 30 seconds.
Chris had stopped breathing, and they had to get oxygen into his lungs. After stabilizing him, he was rushed to an intensive care unit.
Christopher Reeve remains in serious but stable condition. Mr. Reeve currently has no movement or spontaneous respiration.
I can see from reports that Chris suffered a fracture of the upper spine, morbidly called a hangman's fracture. His head had been snapped up and back with great force, breaking the top two vertebrae of his cervical spine.
Surgeons spent 6 hours trying to stabilize Chris's neck to prevent further injury to the spinal cord.
The spinal cord is like the internet of the body, a fragile vine of sensitive tissue neurons that run down the backbone, connecting the brain to the body, sending out vital nerve signals. In Chris's case, this information flow was now disrupted. Further diagnosis revealed he suffered complete paralysis, the loss of sensory feeling and ability to control movement below his neck. The spinal cord does not take all commands from the brain, independently controlling involuntary processes in the bowel, kidneys, and bladder. Chris's heart could also function without signals from the brain, but it would need oxygen, and Chris was now reliant on a ventilator to breathe. His health problems impacted on every aspect of his life, and although it's well known that Chris put up a courageous fight, the huge physical and psychological problems he encountered are undeniable. I have to ask the question, did these overwhelming issues lead him down a dark path?
Good evening. The news that Christopher Reeve had died of heart failure was like hearing of a death in the family. He was that familiar to America.
On October 10th, 2004, America's Man of Steel, Christopher Reeve, died in a hospital in Mount Kisco, New York, just a short distance north of New York City. Now, world-renowned medical examiner and forensic pathologist Dr. Michael Hunter is investigating his death.
After his horse riding accident, Christopher Reeve was left paralyzed from the neck down. Despite that, his recovery astounded experts, with medical statistics predicting that despite his injuries, he would live into his 60s. So what would cause premature death at the age of just 52? I need to investigate the impact of his unrelenting physical battle on his psychological state, starting with the months before his death.
August 2004, New Orleans. Less than 3 months before Christopher Reeve's death. Chris and his film crew have finished filming The Brooke Ellison Story, a movie about a young quadriplegic.
Howard Meltzer, executive producer, The Brooke Ellison Story.
I just remember at the wrap party, Chris had a huge smile on his face the whole time. People coming around him to talk to him. I remember red wine was being given to him. I asked him if it was grape juice or red wine. He told me it was none of my business.
The filming has been a massive success.
It kind of went unsaid how great the moment was, how great this was for Chris.
I can see that Chris seemed to be in a positive psychological state. But I can also see there were darker days.
June 9th, 1995. 2 weeks after the accident, Chris had been told he would never walk again. A devastating blow.
Dana Reeve, Christopher Reeve's wife.
Chris is a man blessed with an extraordinary inner strength. But this has to be the toughest challenge that he's ever faced. I know it's mine. Chris needs all the positive support he can get right now.
Dr. Linda Papadopoulos, psychologist.
Statistically speaking, people with spinal cord injury are much more likely to have suicidal ideation. And I think the reason for that is it's about what you're contending with day to day. It's about the differential between what you expected life to be and what it is. But making that jump certainly isn't easy. And for Christopher, like for a lot of people, there are dark days.
When Dana visited, Chris was at rock bottom, as he recalled in an interview.
Could I endure something like this? I just said, no, I don't have the strength. I don't have the inner resources. I think it might be better to let me go.
Chris didn't want to be a burden on anyone. He just didn't see a way forward.
Dana said, I'll only say this once. I signed on to be with you. You are still you, and I love you.
It was Dana who convinced him that he's not to feel sorry for himself, that the person she loved was the person that was still in front of her. I think she really gave him the will to go on.
But Chris still faced a continuing physical and emotional battle.
In June 95, Christopher was very low ebb when suddenly the door burst open and this small hairy man in scrubs burst into the room.
He was talking in a Russian accent and putting on gloves and saying he was going to have to perform a rectal exam. He was a proctologist.
And as most people in that situation would be rather scared, because he couldn't react, couldn't move. Procedure for you. And then the man threw off the scrubs.
Chris looked and he could see that was Robin Williams.
Robin Boom was right there cheering him up.
In the middle of a tragedy like this, in the middle of recuperation, you can still experience genuine joy and laughter and love.
Robin would prove more than just moral support over the coming years.
During the early days of his injury, because he couldn't work anymore and because he was losing his insurance, it wasn't known, but Robin was paying for his medical care.
Despite the support from loved ones, Chris still had to accept a new physical reality.
If Chris didn't show signs of recovery in the 3 years after his accident, his chance of walking again was statistically zero. Reactions to these kinds of physical changes and the day-to-day consequences of the injury often include chronic depression and anxiety.
According to his doctor, Chris contemplated drowning himself years after the accident, describing a time when he asked to be wheeled down to the river.
I can see the medical examiner did not conduct an investigation into the death of Christopher Reeve, which would have been the correct protocol if suicide was suspected. I think that we can rule out that he ended his own life prematurely. It's clear he found strength to carry on through his family.
There are people who have no motivation to get out of bed here. There are people who are sunk in despair, and I feel so sorry for them. But sitting here on my right is my motivation. Without Dana, I couldn't do any of this. Without my kids, I couldn't do any of this. But they're my reason to push and to keep going.
Ladies and gentlemen, our honored guest, Christopher Reeve.
Chris continued to improve his mental and physical state by working towards a seemingly impossible dream.
He once told me, he says, by the time I hit 50, I'm going to walk again. And you just, at first, you know, if you didn't know Chris, you would go, well, that's wishful thinking. But those of us who knew Chris said, there's a pretty good chance that he's going to be able to do that.
Very soon, I will take my family by the hand. And I will stand here in front of the star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Filmmaker Ian Hunt followed Chris's battle to walk for over 18 months.
He was very single-minded, very focused. And I think what he'd done is that he'd transferred that training, that discipline that he had from being an actor into getting better. He never accepted his situation.
That's why I keep up a really rigorous program of exercise. I will not be spending the rest of my life in a wheelchair.
Chris would work out for up to 6 hours a day.
Whatever cutting-edge thing he could find to do to keep moving, he did.
By 2002, Chris's health and rehabilitation had progressed so much that his medical team wanted to experiment with supporting him in water.
They just kind of went for it and let's see what happened. And you could see him moving his leg up and down, and he was doing that on his own. And that was incredible. I know that really spurred him on.
Chris improved from A to C on the ASIA scale, a rating system for the spinal cord injury that measures movement, with A being no sensory or motor function to E being normal. With some muscle function and feeling in his legs and arms, Chris's recovery at this latest stage in his rehabilitation was something that had never been recorded in a human being before. It seemed Chris had overcome his mental battles and was on the road to realizing his dream of walking again. So what would kill him so suddenly, 2 years later in 2004?
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. And I bet it could be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling policies with GEICO. GEICO makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to GEICO.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's GEICO easy. Visit GEICO.com today. That's GEICO.com.
Good morning, everyone. Christopher Reeve is being remembered this morning. The actor-turned-activist died Sunday in New York.
World-renowned medical examiner and forensic pathologist Dr. Michael Hunter is now investigating the death of this beloved actor.
After Chris died, much of the world's media reported his cause of death as heart failure. As a quadriplegic confined to a wheelchair, Chris's cardiovascular system would certainly have been compromised. But did this really play a part in his death?
August 2004, the Reeve family home, Bedford, New York, 2 months before Chris's death. Chris begins his day in bed, being cared for by his in-house medical team.
Chris had spent an awful lot of time either in that chair or in a bed. You know, he was immobile, unable to exercise and move around by himself.
Other than his exercise regimen, Chris was immobile for large parts of the day. This reduced his cardiovascular activity and put him at higher risk of atherosclerosis. Atherosclerosis is a heart disease in which a waxy substance called plaque builds up in the arteries. As the major blood vessels leading from the heart become clogged, blood flow is reduced, putting Chris at higher risk of heart attacks. I can't rule out atherosclerosis as a factor in Chris's death, especially because I've discovered that other parts of his cardiovascular system were badly compromised less than 2 years after his accident.
January 15th, 1997. Less than 2 years after his spinal cord injury, Chris was admitted to the hospital with a blood clot in one of the veins in his leg.
Chris presented with a clot behind his knee, and this was likely a deep vein thrombosis. Deep vein thrombosis is a blood clot that forms in the deep veins of a person's extremities, most often the leg. From here, the clot can travel upwards and block the pulmonary artery. If the arteries are already constricted by atherosclerosis, it can be a deadly combination. As a person with an acute spinal cord injury, Chris was much more susceptible to developing these deadly clots as a result of being paralyzed.
During the episode in 1997, Chris was hospitalized for a week and given blood thinners. Eventually, the life-endangering clot disappeared.
Most patients who remain at risk of deep vein thrombosis will also receive regular medication to prevent the problem from recurring. I can't rule out that cardiovascular problems impacted on Chris's death, especially given the sudden nature of his passing. However, I can see his accident affected him in another major way. It made him reliant on a machine to breathe. Could this have played a part in his death?
Fall 1995. The Kessler Institute for Rehabilitation, West Orange, New Jersey. Chris had moved out of ICU and was beginning to adapt to life with a machine breathing for him.
When he was off his ventilator, Chris's spontaneous intake of breath was just 75 cubic centimeters, the same as a bird. To just get off of this machine, Chris needed 16 times that amount of air. The ventilator works by forcing oxygen into the lungs through the tube in Chris's neck and allowing carbon dioxide to be expelled. I can see that this life-supporting technology was not always without its problems.
The nurse went to get him something, and his ventilator popped out.
Occasionally, the ventilator would slip. He was seen as like a tuna fish on the deck flopping around. And if one of the nurses didn't come, he could have suffocated, he could have died.
Chris was driven towards the goal of weaning himself off the ventilator with the help of his team.
They come in and simply pull the plug and say, breathe. 12 minutes now, and I came here with zero. It's not climbing Mount Everest, but certainly a small hill.
By 1996, Chris had made some improvement with independent breathing. However, the ventilator was still a huge part of his daily life and also increased his risk of respiratory infection, most notably pneumonia and inflammation of the lungs. Unable to cough and sometimes swallow, it's more difficult for people with spinal cord injuries to dislodge bacteria from their throats, making them almost 40 times more likely to die of pneumonia than the general population. Yet, in both the personal and press accounts detailing Chris's last days, I see no mention of pneumonia or chest infections. However, with no publicly available death certificate or medical examiner's report, I can't rule out that this may have been a factor in his death. And I can see that Chris's battle to breathe may have impacted on his body in other ways.
February 28, 2003. University Hospital's Case Medical Center, Cleveland, Ohio. 18 months before Chris dies. Surgeons finally agreed to perform a procedure on him that is still under clinical trials.
He was a bit of a risk taker. He was prepared to push it. He wasn't reckless, but he was prepared to try stuff that people hadn't tried before.
Chris's operation was the third ever of its kind in the world. Surgeons worked on Chris's diaphragm, the major muscle of respiration located below the lungs. In healthy people, this muscle contracts rhythmically and involuntarily. In Chris's case, the movement in his diaphragm had to be electronically stimulated. After placing electrodes into the diaphragm, surgeons wired them to an external pulse generator, similar to a pacemaker for his lungs.
I think what's really interesting is that we see a lot of the things that made him, you know, a great actor and very successful prior to the injury, he's still doing after the injury. So he's taking risks, he's pushing boundaries, he's not taking no for an answer.
Chris's surgical procedure was performed without problems, but according to his own testimony, he later considered it a failure. It didn't allow him to become completely free of his ventilator, and the site of its implantation in his abdomen failed to ever heal properly. As a result, he couldn't exercise as much, and his rehabilitation slowed. He also contracted a series of bacterial infections that were symptomatic of a compromised immune system. But Chris had fought back from deadlier situations than this in his past. So what was going on inside his body this time to finally vanquish the man that many regarded as Superman?
World-renowned medical examiner Dr. Michael Hunter is investigating the death of America's Superman, Christopher Reeve.
So far, I've discovered that Christopher Reeve's health had been severely compromised by his spinal cord injury. However, from reports, I see that Chris and his team were vigilant about his cardiovascular issues and infections, particularly following the surgery on his diaphragm, which left him less able to exercise and potentially more susceptible to ill health. I need to investigate if there are any further clues from his last days that could hold the key to his unexpected death.
October 5th, 2004, 5 days before Christopher Reeve's death. Chris has flown to Chicago to speak at a fundraiser for a rehabilitation center.
He was unique. He just had a great presence, and when he started talking, he really backed it up with his intellect.
There was a time when I flew on my own. But now a plane is very useful.
I can see from video footage of his last public speech in Chicago that Chris looked pale and gaunt. Possible indicators of a downturn in his health. Chris's accounts tell me his experimental diaphragm operation had left him fighting an open wound, and he talked about infections and rejection from his body. Despite these obvious health issues, Chris knew he had expert health care in place and was determined as ever to not let this condition restrict him.
Since his accident, Chris had turned a personal tragedy into a very public crusade, becoming a voice for the 50 million disabled people in America. He devoted himself to campaigning for the use of stem cells in spinal cord treatment.
You know, it gets lonely sometimes to talk about, come on, let's be more progressive. Come on, let's take reasonable risks. Come on, let's try an idea. Let's be safe, but let's be bold at the same time. And
he wasn't going to let anyone slow him down, and he just kept pushing and pushing and pushing.
It's been an honor to spend this time with you. Thank you.
I can see from reports that during the last weeks of Chris's life, his continued determination and busy work schedule may have started to get the better of him. Despite his round-the-clock medical care, it appears he was becoming increasingly vulnerable to infection.
October 7th, 2004, the Reeve family home, Bedford, New York, 3 days before his death. Chris has returned from Chicago to the family home. His personal medical team treats a bed sore on an area of his lower back.
I asked the nurses, how bad could it be? And that's when they told me that the bed sores could be deep. And it was getting dangerous. They were getting very concerned about it.
Chris was still suffering from decubitus or bed sores that had plagued him throughout 2004, including on the film set in New Orleans. To treat these as well as other infections, Chris relied on what he referred to as industrial-strength antibiotics, suggesting that he was now dealing with virulent forms of bacteria. This is supported by an account of Chris fighting MRSA in the last few months of his life. MRSA, or methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus, is a type of bacteria that has developed a resistance to widely used antibiotics. MRSA infections are symptomatic of an immune system under constant pressure and are harder to treat. Chris should have allowed his body time to recuperate and fight these infections, something that he didn't seem to do.
10 a.m., October 9th, 2004, the day before Christopher Reeve's death. Dana is away in California on an acting job, leaving Chris planning to go to Will's hockey game. The medical team plead with Chris to stay at home to let his drugs take effect, but his mind is made up. By 3 that afternoon, Chris is enjoying quality time with Will.
One of the things he missed the most was any kind of intimate relationship with his son. He hadn't given his son a hug in years. So any time he could spend with Will going to ice hockey was absolutely imperative.
He became very invested in the relationships that mattered. And I don't think it's really a surprise. Against medical advice, he goes to support his little boy. I think it becomes an important thing for him.
At around 10:30, after spending the evening at home together, Will says goodnight to his dad.
He did what he did every night, which was he wiggled his dad's toe to say goodnight.
It would be the last time that Will saw his dad conscious.
According to reports, Chris succumbed to a massive heart attack at just before midnight.
Chris is successfully resuscitated, and paramedics are called. He's rushed to Northern Westchester Hospital in Mount Kisco, New York, 10 miles from his home. According to reports, by the early hours of October 10th, Chris had lapsed into a coma and is on life support. He suffers a series of cardiac arrests, but the team fights to keep him alive.
Clearing.
Dana rushes back from California and eventually arrives with Chris still in a deep coma. Deciding it's time for Will to say his final goodbye, Dana asks for him to be driven to the hospital.
Will had to deal with his father passing. She had to be brave for Will.
Will went over to his dad and did their sign-off. That was his way to say goodbye, Dad.
Christopher Reeve never emerged from his coma and finally died on October 10th, 2004.
On Close Up this morning, the death of Chris Reeve. He died Sunday at the age of 52 after suffering a heart attack. He appeared just last week at a rehabilitation center in Chicago.
Thank you very much.
When I got the call, in a way, it did surprise me because I believed that Chris was going to walk again. He had me absolutely believing that. It was just such a sad call to get on many levels. You know, you're losing a friend. Then, you know, I was thinking, who's going to take up the mantle of what he was doing? Because he was so unique.
According to some press reports, Christopher's heart attack was brought on by sepsis. Sepsis is the body's reaction to an infection of the blood. The immune system usually works to fight bacteria to prevent infection. But with sepsis, it can turn on itself, leading to tissue damage and, in some cases, organ failure and heart attack. Conflicting accounts indicate that Chris displayed no obvious symptoms of this condition. No fever, no chills, no anxiety. But with no forensic report on his blood or urine available to me, I cannot exclude sepsis as a factor in his death. And I've discovered another version of events that compounds this mystery of his death further. Could a toxic reaction to an antibiotic have led to the sudden death of America's Superman?
On October 10th, 2004,
Clearing.
Christopher Reeve's heart stopped. And after suffering a series of cardiac arrests, he died. Expert forensic pathologist Dr. Michael Hunter is examining the last hours of Christopher Reeve's life to discover exactly what may have caused his untimely death.
There is no official medical explanation of why Christopher Reeve died, but some press reports explain that the presentation of his sudden heart failure was the end result of sepsis, the body's reaction to an infection of the blood. However, an interview with Dana in 2005 describing the events leading up to her husband's death sheds new light.
In retrospect, what we realize is that he had had a, probably had a reaction to a drug.
On the day of his death, it seems Chris was administered drugs, possibly an antibiotic, to treat his bed sores.
Other accounts back up Dana's interview, describing how Chris went into an anaphylactic shock. An anaphylactic shock is when the body suffers a severe allergic reaction. It occurs because the body's immune system reacts aggressively to the presence of a substance that it wrongly perceives as a threat. This triggers a sudden release of chemicals from cells in the blood and tissues, causing a drop in blood pressure and narrowing of the airways. As oxygen levels plummet, Chris would have likely fallen unconscious. Without oxygen in his system, he would have experienced catastrophic organ failure and cardiorespiratory arrest in less than 10 minutes after being administered the drug. This version of events tallies closely with Chris's rapid presentation, and I can also see that Chris had a history of suffering allergies.
He had a very particular physiognomy that he would react to things that no one reacted to, or he would react to something on the third or fourth dosage where he had been fine. And in this case, that was, I think, what happened, which precipitated then a series of catastrophic events, which he just couldn't come out of.
From a medical examiner's position, concluding exactly what happened to Christopher Reeve remains problematic. There was no official investigation or postmortem examination. Reports from the emergency medical services that attended are unavailable, and his death certificate will only become public record in 2029. I can only present a series of alternative theories. I have to consider sepsis or septic shock as a possible factor in Chris's death. Some accounts mention that Chris showed no symptoms of blood poisoning. But without the complex investigation, laboratory tests, and postmortem medical procedures normally undertaken by the medical examiner, I cannot discount this theory. His wife Dana's explanation that Chris had an allergic reaction to a drug shortly before his death also needs to be considered. Certainly, if Chris had an anaphylactic reaction, this could have been a factor. But with no access to blood and urine tests, this is also not conclusive. A person's cause of death is often the end result of a number of medical conditions, and this is something I need to consider as well. The most viable argument for me is that as a paralyzed person, Chris's heart and cardiovascular system were already compromised. As Chris's health deteriorated and his ability to exercise in the last year of his life was restricted, he was at increased risk of cardiovascular disease and forming deadly blood clots of the legs, something which he'd battled before. This could have made him more predisposed to the sudden cardiac arrest that he reportedly suffered. Despite all the conflicting evidence, there is one certainty in this uncertain case. Christopher Reeve's catastrophic riding accident in Virginia almost 10 years before he died was the beginning of the end. He went from being at the peak of his physical fitness to a spinal cord injured quadriplegic in an instant. But Chris never stopped believing in his own superpowers. He never gave up hope that he would walk again. And that drive, determination, and dedication to fight was for not just his own future, but for the future of others. Working alongside a devoted team of caregivers and the love of his family meant he could live his last years to the fullest. Medical statistics suggest he should have lived into his 60s, but having reviewed all the evidence, I think he did well to live for the 9 years that he did. Ultimately, the systemic failure of his body and susceptibility to infection and clots became so complete that it seems, according to the accounts that I have available, his cardiovascular system would eventually collapse. Sadly, this was a battle the Man of Steel couldn't win. And his early death at just 52 was, in the end, inevitable.
I don't think anyone's played Superman better. He embodied it because that's who he was. He was that driven person who, you know, who would try and overcome all.
We live in a time that when the words impossible and unsolvable are no longer in the vocabulary.
He was really one of a kind. And it's a shame that a person like him passed away when you wish he had another 20 years.
As one cartoonist wrote, he was the Man of Steel. He had incredible vision. He used his powers to help others. And oh yeah, he also made some Superman movies. That was Chris Reeve.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Autopsy. Don't forget to subscribe at podcastone.com with the Podcast One app or at Apple Podcasts. Then go to reels.com, that's reelz.com, for clips, extras, and more from the TV version of the series, including reenactments and autopsy photos you'll only see on Reels channel. Find Reels on your TV at reels.com. I'm Dr. Michael Hunter.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. And I bet it could be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling policies with GEICO. GEICO makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to GEICO.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's GEICO easy. Visit GEICO.com today. That's GEICO.com.